All right, welcome to the Film Experience podcast. A special episode today. It's the SmackDown of 1970. We're looking back at the supporting actress race, and I have an esteemed panel with me that I'm very excited to introduce. So acclimate yourself to their voices so you can tell who we are throughout. First up is Mark Blankenship.
Well, hello, everyone. That's right. It is me.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Mark.
Sure. I am the host with my esteemed colleague, Sarah Bunting, of a podcast called Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs, where we do, in fact, talk about songs. And I came into being as a professional person, as a theater critic and reporter for Variety and the New York Times. And I am now currently a content director at a marketing agency in New York, which affords me the opportunity to make fun projects about Broadway shows all the time.
Well, you are a man of many talents.
Well, yes. Oh, I mean, thank you. I'm not supposed to agree when someone says thank you.
Well, originally I was going to make Mark talk about the song nominees of this year when we all met, but then I looked at them and I couldn't recognize even one song. So it was not a banner year for the best song category.
No, bless their hearts. When I looked back, in fact, there was only one song that I had even mildly heard of, and now I'm just trying to vamp as I look back to see what the song nominees even were. Oh, right, and the only reason I even knew the song from the movie Scrooge is because my mother and I used to watch it every year. Otherwise, no, not a hit among them.
But if I had watched the movies beforehand, I would have known that we could have talked about Stand By Your Man, which is basically Karen Black's theme song in Five Easy Pieces. Okay, we have Dan Callahan.
Hello there. Hello, everyone.
Tell us about yourself, Dan.
I'm a film critic for Nylon and The Wrap. I write theater reviews for The Village Voice, and I've written books on Barbara Stanwyck and Vanessa Redgrave. And I have a new book about screen acting from Lillian Gish to James Dean. So I write about acting a lot.
So, were any of these five women in your book?
No, because I'm writing really about the 1930s and 1940s actors and actresses. So no, the women aren't in my book right now. But I've written about some of them. I wrote a piece about Karen Black after she died for Roger Ebert.
I was thinking maybe more in Stapleton, but I realize she's a little bit after your book.
She is, but she's certainly one of the method actors, and I do write about that a lot. Kim Stanley, Geraldine Page, she's of that generation of method actresses. So,
Okay. And Denise Grayson.
Hi, good morning. What an esteemed panel. I'm scared.
Don't be scared. We love to have actors on the podcast. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm calling you. I think you guys are all in my hometown, but I'm not right now. I'm a Brooklyn girl, and
Hey.
so I'm on the other side right now. But what can I tell you? I'm an actress. Wasn't always. I guess I'm one of those hyphenates. I started life out at a young age as a lawyer, and studied for years and years and years and years and years that method and all the other things you're talking about. In fact, I teach and coach now as well. So I'm an actor and a producer now as well, working on a feature at the moment, an adaptation of a Walter Mosley novel.
Whoa.
And I don't know, what else can I tell you? I'm excited to do this.
Well, Denise and I met because of The Social Network, because she was one of the lawyers in that movie.
I know, don't be afraid to tell people who you really are. I used to hide it all the time. I would tell lawyers that I wouldn't tell them I was an actress, and I would never tell people in the entertainment industry that I was a lawyer. And look, I surprised them.
By combining the two, you found your groove.
I did. So don't be afraid of who you are ever, because it gives you your best shot.
Okay, Lena House.
Hi. I write about movies, TV, just like anything that I can kind of define as cinema loosely. And I like to I write at mostly at the site Film Misery, occasionally an outlet called Spark and Fizz. And I like just like centering how everything that I can construe to be gay even vaguely is in films. So, yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to how you do that with these films then.
Yeah, I feel like definitely like the Hitchhikers in Five Easy Pieces, but yeah.
Oh, yes, yes.
I love them. I love those women. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Lena and I have been running into each other at the New York Film Festival for years. Mm-hmm. So happy to have you. And then finally, we have Bobby Rivers.
Hello, everybody. I'm probably the oldest one in the bunch. So this is, I feel like Cocoon meets Baywatch right now. So,
I am dressed like Pamela Anderson, so that also. That,
well, dang, so am I.
Oh.
I'm born and raised in South Central LA. Started my broadcast career in Milwaukee, where I was. They tell me the first African American to ever do film reviews and entertainment interviews on a weekly basis. So I had started on radio, and when I got to TV, most Milwaukeeans called this a compliment. Wow, you didn't sound colored on the radio. So...
Oh.
When was this? What year was this?
This was early, late 70s, early 80s.
Mm.
And then my goal was to get to New York, and thank heaven, I made my goal come true. And if anybody remembers the old VH1 days, I was one of the VH1 VJs, and I had a talk show. And so since then, it's been entertainment reports on news, even did a stint on Food Network. And now I've been doing commercials and blogging and podcasts. So there you have it. I hope I summed it up in a somewhat entertaining way.
Well, you've been evolving over the years. You have to keep people guessing.
It's the truth. It really is the truth.
I met Bobby because of Twitter, because you have a great Twitter account, so everybody should follow it.
Thank you.
You're always talking about, that's how I knew you loved old movies, is you mentioned them frequently.
I think I've been irritating Turner Classic Movies in requesting that they have people of color on the channel, but that's another story.
So, where to even begin with these movies? Well, now that you know everyone's voices, well, it'll just be a free-for-all. We'll all talk. Airport. I figure we should start there because it was such a big, huge hit. And it's an ensemble, so perfect for our group discussion.
Wait, does that mean that we're part of the airport ensemble? So, can I be the inept security guard, please?
Yeah, since I'm the oldest, I'll play Ms. Quonset.
Great.
You know, I wanted to say that some of the nominees were in later airport films, like Lee Grant was in Airport 77. Karen Black was notoriously in Airport 1975. So,
oh,
I think there's a
lineage. Okay, do her line from that one. Do Karen's line.
Which one do you want me? I could do the whole performance. Which one, what's the line you like the best?
She can't fly this plane.
The stewardess is flying. Or what's her name in it? It's Nancy. Charles keeps saying Nancy. It's okay, Nancy. This very patriarchal voice. Oh, anyway. Gosh.
Man.
Maybe they saw Helen Hayes beat them, and they were like, if I star in an airport movie, maybe I'll
right.
That could very well be. That could very well be. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, Towering Inferno is generating Oscar-nominated performances. The Poseidon Adventure, I mean, I can understand why they might think, well, the lightning will never stop striking this fine, fine genre.
Airport, the year's most widely read novel, becomes today's most exciting, most timely motion picture. Airport, big scale in every way, has the biggest all-star cast ever assembled for a single Universal motion picture. Burt Lancaster, Dean Martin, Gene Seberg, Jacqueline Bisset, George Kennedy, Helen Hayes, Van Heflin, Maureen Stapleton, Barry Nelson, Lloyd Nolan, Donna Winter.
The pilot from your Flight 45 made a shortcut across the field. And he didn't make it.
Well, what are you doing about it?
Well, when the snow melts in April, we'll get it out.
What the hell do you think I'm doing about it?
Outselling any novel of recent years, translated into 14 languages, Arthur Hailey's Airport was written for the screen and directed by Academy Award winner George Seton. It has seven stories tied into one. Dean Martin is pilot Vernon Demarest, loved by stewardess Jacqueline Bissett, and by his wife, Barbara Hale.
You're sure?
Do you mean am I sure I'm pregnant? Or am I sure you're the father?
Burt Lancaster is airport manager Mel Bakersfeld, at the crisis stage with his socialite wife, Donna Winter.
A week ago, I didn't know we'd have the worst storm in 6 years.
You've always got some damn excuse.
Gene Seberg is Tanya, his devoted assistant.
I'll miss you.
Will you? Enough not to let me go.
The first lady of the American stage, Helen Hayes, plays the mind-boggling, huggable, perpetual stowaway, Ada Quonset.
Oh, my dear, I couldn't possibly afford a ticket.
Van Heflin gives a superb performance as the desperate Guerrero, matched by Maureen Stapleton as his wife.
Stop dreaming. Just hold on to the job.
I'll do it right this time. I won't mess it up.
And lusty, gutsy Petroni has to be Academy Award winner George Kennedy.
I'll have this mother out of here by midnight.
No! No! Personal property, you've got no right to take it over here. There!
Stop! Stop!
No! 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 You stay where you are!
Guerrero, listen to me. You'll kill yourself or nothing if you explode that bomb.
For crisis authenticity, airport has no equal. For mounting tension, airport has no equal.
Decompression making emergency descent.
For sheer fingernail-biting suspense, airport has no equal.
You are leaving my area. Contact Cleveland Center, 117.5. Good luck.
Airport.
We're gonna crash. We're gonna be killed. I know we're all gonna be...
did. It was an airport was a best-selling novel that sold well, and the movie was a hit movie. But man, you know, it's only because I love you that I sat through that one again. That movie, that is a piece of cheese with wings.
Well, I could quote Airplane, but I had never seen Airport before. I'm embarrassed to say.
Now you see how much of it inspired Airplane.
Holy yes. cow, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Well, I will
and I know it started that whole disaster movie trend, and it must have been new and so interesting at the time, but now it was pretty funny to watch.
Well, the nuns? The the passengers who should have been sucked out of the plane?
Yeah. I love that somehow Jacqueline Bisset gets knocked over and knocked unconscious by the explosion, but somehow doesn't get sucked out because she, while unconscious, she can hold on to...
She can hold on.
and look gorgeous.
And maybe like five reporters are on the scene when the plane lands, and you could run up to Maureen Stapleton and say, okay, yeah, the bomb exploded, but only a stewardess was injured. That's the worst thing that happened.
You know the best moment in that movie, I think, Jacqueline Bisset slaps Helen Hayes. I love when she smacks her. She smacks her in the face for all that overacting she's doing. You know?
There should have been a line for that. I mean, I wanted to step
behind her. She shouldn't have gotten an Oscar. She should have gotten jail time for that point.
Well,
that character should have been taken out in handcuffs by the FBI in her first scene. Because, you know, she's trying to be plucky with that little bunny hat
on
her
head. She's so cute. Oh, my God.
She's so cute. Well, and you think, okay,
I do have to say,
she's naughty. She's cute and she's naughty, you know?
I have to interrupt to say that this was maybe the most divisive performance in the panel. You guys haven't seen the whole thing now, but she got everywhere from 1 to 5 stars.
Oh. And you know what? I, Mark Blankenship, here today in 2018, will acknowledge that I ranked her first out of all of them. I own it. I thought her performance was so delightful, but I completely understand how someone could also think this performance deserves to have a subpoena issued against her.
Okay, Denise Grayson will suck up to it also, and I did the same.
Yes.
And I realize all of these movies are old-fashioned and chauvinistic and they shocked my conscience, most of them. But I just put myself back then, and Helen Hayes is a comic delight, and she had so much fun. And she just did it.
It's and a very professional, slick kind of thing, yes.
And for like, Helen Hayes...
playing that audience, you know? She knows right. how to do it.
Yeah. And here she was. She was the first lady of the American theater, who had previously won an Oscar in the early 1930s for The Sins of Madeline Claudette, I think was the name of the film.
Yes.
So you knew Helen Hayes for serious roles in her film career, and she didn't have an extensive film career, but they were always heavy roles. The one she got the Oscar for, Anastasia. Farewell to Arms.
She's very good at Farewell to Arms. We have to give her that.
She is. Yeah. So in this, you see Helen Hayes lighten it up.
Mm-hmm. And then she did that for the rest of her film career. She gave the same performance then for the rest of her life in film.
Right. Well, hey, if you win the Oscar, you know.
I'm cute and naughty is what she did for the rest of her life. Really.
It's kind of like when you reward someone for something, they repeat it.
And to her, and to her defense, sometimes a star in film—that's what it is. You're ultimately hired to just do what you do.
And I think the Oscars of that year, you had sort of the old guard, like if you will, what Tom Brokaw called the Greatest Generation, the World War II generation, going up against the Vietnam era generation, which was protesting a war. So this is for 1970. And the previous year, the Best Picture was the first X-rated movie to win the Oscar for Best Picture, Midnight Cowboy.
Yeah.
So, I think, in a way, it was the old guard of the Academy honoring one of its own.
And that's a good reminder that in 1970, we're just a year off from John Wayne having just won for True Grit. So it's like, there's definitely that tension in... okay, there's all these funky Five Easy Pieces, Hal Ashby people coming in, but we are going to make room for our heroes, y'all.
Right.
Yeah, it's like comfort wins. Comfort wins, yeah.
Yeah.
Airport was a Best Picture nominee. I think Love Story was a Best Picture nominee, too. And there
it was.
You had, just like Helen Hayes, someone who had been making films since the 1930s, Ray Milland is in there. You know, he had won an Oscar for Best Actor, and here is an old guard member in a movie with the new guard, Ryan O'Neal and Ally McGraw. Mm-hmm.
I wonder if, I sometimes wonder this about our current movies, and, you know, we all talk about the Oscars every year. If, people, 20 years from now, if they're going to see this tension in groups of nominees from the now... that some feel very modern and some feel very dated, because in this group of film, there is, it's really like a mash of
so to speak.
Literally. Yeah.
Because even though MASH has like its elements that are dated, and I'm sure a lot of people are horrified by it now, it's very modern filmmaking. Like it's,
Matt,
like
you know cutting... what? I'm glad to be a part of this because I loved revisiting MASH. Mm-hmm. I really did. And Matt, first of all, we practically grew up with the TV version. That sitcom seemed to go on forever. So I'd forgotten that Frank Burns, who was sort of adult in the sitcom, was played by Robert Duvall.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And opposite Sally Kellerman. And here's the way that I looked at it. I went, oh my gosh, Hot Lips Houlihan and Frank Burns are like members of the Trump administration versus the resistance versus the non-Fox press. That was almost like the attitude it had to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the attitude. And I don't know if I had seen this movie 20 years ago, but had not seen it since.
Right.
That might be the attitude that the film wants us to take about those two characters versus everyone else. I was horrified by the way that Hot Lips Houlihan got treated, because from what I could tell, all she did was ask people to follow the rules and not play football, and then maybe, as a woman, evince too much passion about her career. I mean, meanwhile, the guys that saved the baby, who we're supposed to really love, they're structurally designed to destroy her in every possible way, so that when she is crying naked, like, it's a joke. I realize that is the most... 2018 knee-jerk reaction, and yet that is exactly the reaction that I had.
Right. There were problems. People had problems with that at the time, that her character was being punished too much for, like, she didn't do so much that she deserved. Like, does anyone deserve such awful revenge? You know, it's very uncomfortable and very, but so it's a difficult thing to come to terms with.
But I will say one thing that I found interesting in all of your write-ups, and you'll see this when you read the SmackDown, I think everybody feels that Kellerman rose above that.
A United States Army field hospital somewhere near the front lines.
Check this place out. See what the nurses are like.
That one, the sultry bitch with the fire in her eyes.
Onward, Christian soldiers, marching as to war.
Who are those men? Friends of yours, Murray?
I think you will find these accommodating. They're quite dry.
Don't you use olives?
We do have to make certain concessions to the war. We're 3 miles from the front line.
This is the story of two indispensable military surgeons. They had the army over a barrel. But did they take advantage of it? Yes. MASH, a motion picture that raises some important moral questions. And then it drops them.
What are you two hooligans doing in this hospital?
Well, what's the matter with her today?
Look, Mother, I want to go to work in 1 hour. We are the pros from Dover.
Somebody get that dirty old man out of this operating theater.
And then give me at least one nurse who knows how to work in close without getting her tits in my way.
I wonder how a degenerated person like that could have reached a position of responsibility in the Army Medical Corps.
He was drafted.
Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come.
His will be done.
Oh, Frank, my lips are hot. Oh, kiss my heart,
Glenn.
We have got to share this with the rest of the
Frank. Frank. Oh.
What the hell is that?
Oh, Frank. Wait a second.
Turn the light off.
I think she
really makes you take the character more seriously than the movie takes the character.
She gives
that character a warmth and a likability that another actress may not have found. And I think that Kellerman should have had a bigger film career than she did in the 1970s. You know, she gives a nice little undertexture to Margaret. I think she plays her as someone who is in a war and at war with herself.
Mm-hmm. So, Lena, I want to hear from you. How would you queer up MASH or Airport?
I realize I'm just sort of sitting here, or like a gape, like Maureen Stapleton in Airport, just like not really reacting, just like sort of stunned. But but yeah, I just kind of like generally agree, especially like especially on Hot Lips Houlihan, just being just like my reaction when I first saw it and rewatching it, just like being the same of this feels like very cruel sexual harassment to be watching and to be joking about. And she and Kellerman does a really good job of still playing it for comedy, still getting like some sense of levity out of it. And yeah, just like the whole, like, his will be done kind of kind of sexual play was just so, like, it was delightful, even if what comes afterwards is just so disappointing and frustrating.
Yeah.
And she goes from being so by the book to literally being a cheerleader for the team by the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, you know, it made me think, if I may get super dramaturgical for a moment, I'm going to lower my voice. I think a lot about comedy and how comedy so often is about bringing order back to a disordered world. And this movie so clearly uses the two main strategies, which is, one strategy is to evict one of the people who is causing disorder, which is what happens to Robert Duvall's character. And then the other strategy in comedy often to reorder the world is to subsume the person who is bringing disorder and making them like everyone else. And that's what happens to her. And we're supposed to typically, the author seems to usually ask us to feel great about the person who's being subsumed. But then you look at something in hindsight, Shakespeare's plays are such a great example of this. And it's like, wow, it's so interesting to see what this era thought of as being, as being a positive outcome for someone who was considered to be outside of the order that we wanted. It says so much about what we think order is, what people at the time thought order was, or what the artist thought order was. And mm-hmm. that's why I'm so struck by the fact that though the filmmaking style is so great, this movie, but really so many of the movies that we watched for this project, were like aggressively, brilliantly, artistically defending or presenting a worldview that now I find repugnant. And it's just so interesting to see that the people who ostensibly I'm aligned with in the way that I admire innovation in art or self-expression are creating a worldview that now feels like something I would want to flee from as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm. That's so beautifully stated. I don't have to say anything now.
I read, there's this Robert Altman oral biography, and so I read about the making of MASH, and what I found very interesting is if Sally Kellerman's character was supposed to not be in the rest of the movie after the shower scene, but Altman told her that after she played the scene where she's all upset in the office, he said, "You can stay in the movie now. I like her now. She's vulnerable now. So you can stay in." And so they it was a very improvisation thing. So anyway, that's the way it was not in the script that way. He kept her in as a cheerleader because he wanted to have her around more. I don't know.
I have a question about one character. Do you think it would have worked if the dentist, the well-endowed dentist, had turned out to be latent homosexual, and they brought in a guy instead of a Dish Schneider?
Oh, right.
That's very tricky. That's a very tricky question. I mean, I think if you look at Robert Altman's career, he's a nonconformist and he's a rebel, and I think that he might have been up for something like that. If you look at something like Streamers, or you look at something like some of the later films, I think if for a man of his generation, anything that was rebellious, anything that wasn't conventional, he liked it. So I can actually imagine that happening, but, you know.
Except for Queer, his movies aren't really, they don't really go there.
Robert Altman?
Yeah.
Well, in Streamers, there's this very homoerotic thing happens between the soldiers and Streamers, this 80s movie. And there's a lot of other films of his where there is something like that. It certainly isn't in MASH, though. There isn't anything like MASH.
No. So I have one question about Airport, jumping back to Airport for a second. Given that the cast is so large, do you all feel that Maureen and...
Helen.
And Helen were the two best performances, or did you have other favorites within the movie?
I kind of like Jacqueline Bisset. I did think that there was a degree of, I don't know, it just like warmth and reacting very kind of organically with like what is like going on with her character. I also like Dana Winter as like the frustrated wife of Burt Lancaster's character. Mm-hmm. Was like a good scene of just like active conflict and defiance.
Mm-hmm. I also
think
Dan Heflin
is very touching as the man with the bomb, Maureen Stapleton's husband. I think the two of them are doing very good work together. And
I do too. And I also like, I like Jacqueline Bisset. I was also a Dean Martin fan. I think, to me personally, I felt that the Rat Pack image kind of took away the fact that it, just like Sinatra, Dean Martin did some pretty good acting, which never got him nominated for an award, but he did some solid film acting, mm-hmm. like in Rio Bravo, Career, The Young Lions, and he's good here. It's more of a, it's to me, Airport is like a big Universal soap opera. So,
you
have an Oscar winner. Then on the other hand, to me, Burt Lancaster looked like he would have rather been keeping a dental appointment.
It's true.
Didn't he say at some point that he thought this movie was trash?
He did, I think. Yes,
he did.
Yeah, you can tell he thinks that.
Well, in his defense, he did have a lot of strong films on his resume. So,
absolutely.
Makes me love Burt Lancaster forever.
Oh man, me too.
So, given I also thought Jacqueline Bisset was really good in Airport, but I noticed actually with all of these movies that, well, not MASH, but with the others, that there were a lot of valid choices for supporting actress. Actually, Susan Anspach, who I have to admit I was not familiar with as an actor.
In two movies.
And she's in, and they were her first two movies, it turns out.
And she's good in both of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering why she didn't have a bigger career, or if I was just too young to notice her career, or does anybody have any feelings about her?
Well, she was in Bloom and Love, and she was, and she had Jack Nicholson's baby, and then he wouldn't acknowledge it as legitimate, so that couldn't have helped her out much. You know.
Okay, Jack Nicholson.
Oh, really?
That's the way Hollywood still was at that time. You know, now you could be unmarried and have a bunch of kids, and it's like, oh, fine.
Yeah.
I think, too, maybe it's the type of parts that she played. She played them very well, but they like the woman she plays in Five Easy Pieces, it's a very uncomfortable kind of thing that she's doing. Like, I can see why Karen Black got the nomination over her. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Before we step away from the cast of Airport, I just want to gently say this cast is filled with Oscar nominees, excellent actors, and Gene Seberg is also present.
Gene Seberg is a tricky figure.
I mean, listen,
she's wonderful in Lilith, the Warren Beatty movie, and she's in Breathless. She's everything she needs to be in Breathless. She isn't any good in Airport, but... it's Airport, you know.
But it's Airport. You're right.
Well, here's the thing. I am in a position where for quite a few of these people, including Helen Hayes, I had never seen them in anything before. The legend of Helen Hayes and the fact that there is a Broadway theater named after her that I go to frequently predisposed me to liking her. Mm-hmm. But this was my only exposure to Gene Seberg, and my response was, what? Did you win a contest to get to be in this movie? I don't know.
She did win a contest to get to be in Otto Preminger's St. Joan. She actually did win a contest. What? She was just a girl from a cornfield, you know.
She did? Oh, well.
Oh, yes. So, and she's the classic case of she won a contest. She did an audition. You're like,
I
she's
can't believe that's true.
Wow.
Isn't there a biopic currently in production about her?
What was that?
Isn't there a biopic about Gene Seberg? Currently in production.
Mark Rappaport movie where Mary Beth Hurt plays her, yes. But if you're seeing Gene Seberg in Airport and that's the first time you've seen her, that's the worst possible first exposure.
But you know what? You saying that convinces me. I'm willing to go give her another chance based on what you just said because I want to know more.
Interesting and sad life, too. You know, she supported the Black Panthers and she was hounded for that. And
that's it. And that's why the biopic.
Well, I will say that she seemed so, I feel bad saying this, but she seemed so unlikable in Airport that I almost felt she would have been happier playing the Jacqueline Bisset part where she could have slapped Helen Hayes.
I like it if both of them it's laughter from both ends. That was
Well, isn't that one of the jokes in Airplane that they all line up to slap someone?
They keep slapping the girl.
Yeah.
And that is the end of part one. In part two, we will discuss Five Easy Pieces and The Landlord and other random thoughts.